We have this comforting myth we tell ourselves about healthcare, right?
Oh, absolutely. The implicit contract.
Yeah, exactly. It goes something like, you get sick, you go to the doctor identifies the problem. And because, we live in the 21st century in a G7 country, if there is a medicine that fixes you,
The system just gives it to you.
right, the system delivers the solution. But we're doing a deep dive today into a policy brief that suggests that deal is, well, broken.
Or at least that has some very, very fine print that nobody bothered to tell us about.
Seriously.
Yeah.
So we're looking at a paper from the Canadian Health Policy Journal. It was published in October 2025 by Brett J. Skinner. And it basically asks this one simple, honestly kind of terrifying question. After the federal government says a new drug is safe to use, what actually happens?
And the short answer is, well, a whole lot of waiting. And for most people, a whole lot of nothing.
Which is just wild. And that's what jumped out at me immediately. And just to set the stage for you listening, we aren't talking about, experimental treatments or some weird herbal supplements here.
No, not at all.
We are talking about what they call new active substances.
Right. In the industry, they call them MRANs. And these are the heavy hitters. They're innovative, brand new molecules. These aren't just generic copies or like a slightly different version of Tylenol. These are entirely new treatments for things like cancer, rare diseases, chronic conditions. And specifically, we're looking at the ones authorized by Health Canada between January 1st, 2019 and December 31st, 2023.
So Health Canada has looked at these drugs. They've reviewed the clinical trials. They've stamped the paper that says, yes, this is safe, and yes, this works.
Exactly. That is the marketing authorization. It is the green light to sell the drug in this country.
So logic would dictate that if Ottawa gives the green light, the provinces who, actually run the hospitals and pay the drug bills, they would just add them to the menu, update the list.
Yeah, that is the assumption most voters make. But Skinner looked at the denominator here. There were 196 of these new active substances authorized over that 5-year period.
196. Okay.
Right. And then he looked at the public formularies, which are the lists of covered drugs, across all 10 Canadian provinces as of the end of 2024. He wanted to see how many of those 196 actually made the cut.
And I have to say, looking at this data beforehand, I assumed there would be some lag. Maybe you missed 10% of them, maybe 20% on a bad year.
It is significantly higher than that. I mean, even in the absolute best performing provinces, public plans covered only about a quarter of them.
Hang on, just let's sit with that for a second. The best case scenario is that you get access to one out of every four new medicines.
That is the ceiling. Nationally, the brief concludes that between 73% and 89% of these new drugs just aren't there. They are totally invisible to the public system.
So nearly 90% of the medical innovation from the last 5 years is effectively off limits. Unless, I guess, you have private insurance or a giant stack of cash.
For public plan beneficiaries, yes. And it really turns into this postal code lottery. The brief breaks it down by province, and honestly, the disparity across the country is wild.
Well, let's look at the winners first, if we can even call them that. I see Ontario and Quebec at the top of the table.
They are the leaders. They both covered 52 out of the 196 drugs.
52.
Yeah, which puts them at roughly 27% coverage.
Okay, so the absolute gold standard in Canada right now is failing to list 73% of new federally approved treatments.
It's a sobering statistic, especially for the two biggest provinces with the most buying power. But then you drop down a tier to the Atlantic provinces, New Brunswick, Nova Scotia,
How
Newfoundland.
are they
They're
doing?
all hovering in the mid-20s. New Brunswick has 49 drugs, so about 25%. Newfoundland and Labrador and Nova Scotia are at 45 drugs, so 23%. PEI is at 40 drugs, or 20%.
So statistically, if you move from Toronto to Halifax, you lose access to a handful of drugs, but it's roughly comparable.
Roughly, yeah. But then you look west, and this is where the numbers really just crater.
Yeah, looking at this chart, it is a incredibly steep drop.
Alberta covers 33 drugs. Saskatchewan is at 32.
So they're down in the teens, like 16, 17%.
Right. Manitoba's at 28 drugs, which is 14%. And sitting at the very bottom of the list is British Columbia.
How bad is it for BC?
Out of 196 new active substances approved federally, British Columbia covered 22.
22.
22.
It's barely 11%.
Exactly 11%. That means if a new heart medication or a breakthrough autoimmune therapy was approved in, say, 2020, there's essentially a 90% chance a patient on BC's public plan still couldn't get it by the end of 2024.
That feels incredibly arbitrary. I mean, we are all Canadians, right? We all pay federal taxes that support Health Canada to do these safety checks. But if I live in Vancouver, my federal approval is basically theoretical.
Yes.
The drug exists in the lab. It exists in Ontario, maybe, but it just doesn't exist for me.
It really highlights the massive disconnect between market authorization, which is a federal responsibility, and reimbursement, which is entirely provincial. Just because it's legal doesn't mean it's paid for.
But that's only half the story, right? Because we've established that if you get the drug, it's a coin toss, or much worse.
It's much worse.
But let's say you get lucky, you have a disease, there's a new drug, and you live in a province that actually decides to list it. Do you get it the next day?
Hardly. And this is the second metric Skinner analyzed. He calls it the waiting game, or technically days to listing.
Right, the time tax.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He measured the time from when Health Canada says, issue the notice of compliance to the exact date the provincial plan actually paid for the first prescription.
Okay, so the stopwatch starts the moment the safety check is done.
And it does not stop for a very long time. The fastest province in the country was Alberta.
Okay, Alberta was pretty low on the total coverage list, but maybe they are speedy with the few ones they do actually pick.
Relatively speaking, yes. They averaged 566 days.
Whoa. Wait. 566 days? That's over a year and a half. That's the fastest.
That is the absolute speed record in Canada, yes.
That seems incredibly slow. I mean, in 566 days, you could conceive a child, birth a child, and have it walking around before the drug gets listed.
It really puts it in perspective when you frame it like that. And it only gets longer from there. Saskatchewan was 577 days. British Columbia, despite listing almost nothing, took nearly 600 days to do it.
Right. 598 days for BC?
Yep. Quebec was 608 days. Ontario was 619 days.
So if I'm in Toronto and a life-changing drug is approved today, I am literally marking my calendar for late 2027.
Roughly, yes. Manitoba is at 639. New Brunswick is 677. Nova Scotia is 682. Newfoundland is 750 days. And if you are in Prince Edward Island, really don't hold your breath.
What's the number for PEI?
816 days.
816 days. That is well over 2 years. That's closer to 2.5 years.
It is. And we have to remember, for a patient with a progressive condition, maybe a neurodegenerative disease or an aggressive cancer, 2 years isn't just waiting.
No.
2 years is often the difference between reversible damage and permanent disability. Or worse.
That's the part that just feels so heavy. It's not just paperwork. It's people's lives ticking away while a file sits on a desk somewhere.
And I think it's really important to clarify here. These wait times apply only to the tiny fraction of drugs that eventually got listed.
Oh, right.
For the other 150 plus drugs that never made the list, the wait time is effectively infinite.
Right. So you wait 2 years just to find out the answer is no.
Or the answer never comes at all.
So I have to ask the obvious question here. Why? I mean, I don't believe the people working in these health ministries are evil villains twirling their mustaches wanting people to suffer.
No, of course not.
So why does it take 600, 700, 800 days to put a pill on a list? Is it just bureaucratic incompetence?
It's not incompetence. It's actually the design of the system itself.
Hmm.
Skinner describes it as a series of consecutive hurdles. Think of it like a security checkpoint at an airport. But instead of walking through, you have to drive to an entirely different building for every single step of the process.
Okay, walk me through the buildings.
Building one is Health Canada. They check safety and efficacy.
Where?
You know that part. Once you get your stamp there, you don't go to the pharmacy. You pack up and go to building two, which is the Health Technology Assessment, or HTA.
This is done by the Canada Drug Agency, right? The CDA.
Mostly, yes. And their job isn't to ask, is it safe? Health Canada already did that. Their job is to ask, is it worth it?
Ah, okay.
They look at the clinical value compared to what is already on the market, and they crunch the economic numbers.
I mean, the value check seems reasonable. You want to know if the new expensive drug is actually better than the old cheap one before you buy it for a whole province.
Sure. But that takes time. And once they finally finish their report, you go to Building 3, the PCPA, the Pan-Canadian Pharmaceutical Alliance.
The negotiators.
Right. They take that value assessment from Building 2, and they sit down and try to hammer out a bulk deal with the manufacturer. They say, we'll buy 1 million doses for the country if you drop the price by 20%, that sort of thing.
And finally?
Finally, Building 4, the provincial decision. The negotiated deal goes back to each individual province, and the local minister has to sign off and say, yes, we will actually add this to our specific provincial list.
Okay, I get that you need checks and balances. You need to know it works, you need to know it's good value, and you need a good price.
The problem isn't the steps themselves. It's that they run consecutively, one after the other. You generally can't start negotiating the price until the value assessment is completely finished, and you can't make the provincial decision until the price negotiation is signed, sealed, and delivered.
So it's like waiting in line to buy a movie ticket, and then waiting in another line for popcorn, and then a third line to get into the theater, and by the time you sit down, the movie's half over.
That's exactly it. It creates this massive cumulative drag. Health Canada takes a year, the HTA takes 6 months, the price negotiation takes another year, the province takes 6 months. It just adds up.
Meanwhile, the patient is just waiting.
The patient is watching the clock.
Is there an actual measurement of the damage here? Because the cynic in me, or maybe just playing devil's advocate, might say, well, maybe these drugs aren't that important. Maybe waiting 2 years saves the taxpayers a ton of money and nobody really gets hurt.
Skinner actually addresses that head-on in the brief. He cites some fascinating research by Frank Lichtenberg from 2025 that connect these administrative delays directly to health outcomes. And the data is pretty stark.
What did he find?
He found a direct inverse relationship between drug coverage and mortality.
Break that down for us.
Put simply, the fewer drugs a province covers and the longer they take to cover them, the higher the age-adjusted mortality rate tends to be.
So people effectively die waiting.
The data strongly suggests that yes. And there's another layer to the saving money argument, which is really important. Lichtenberg's research estimates that using newer medicines significantly reduces hospitalizations in subsequent years.
Which makes perfect sense. If you treat the condition early with the best meds, you don't end up crashing into the ER.
Exactly. So the great irony here is that by saving money on the drug budget, by delaying access for 2 years, the system is likely just burning that same cash on hospital beds, complex surgeries, and long-term care instead.
It is the absolute definition of stepping over a $100 bill to pick up a dime.
It's siloed budgeting at its worst. The drug budget looks great on a spreadsheet because they didn't spend the money. The hospital budget completely explodes, but nobody connects the dots between the two.
That is incredibly frustrating. It feels like we are trapped in a loop of our own making here. Does the policy brief offer a way out? Or is Skinner basically just pointing at the burning building and saying, look, it's on fire?
No, he actually proposes a very specific, and I'd say somewhat radical, policy fix. He calls it accelerated access.
I like the name. Speed is good. How would accelerated access actually work?
The core idea is to completely flip the order of operations. Instead of the current system, which is negotiate, then list, he proposes list.
Yeah.
Then negotiate.
List first. So the province just blindly agrees to pay for the drug on day one.
Immediately upon Health Canada approval. The moment the safety stamp is dry, it goes straight onto the provincial formulary.
Hold on. I have to play the fiscal conservative here for a second. If I'm the drug company and I know the government legally has to list my drug on day one, why would I ever offer a discount? I'd charge $1 million a pill. Wouldn't this just bankrupt the provinces overnight?
That is the immediate fear, right? But here is how the mechanism actually works. Initially, yes, the province pays the manufacturer's suggested list price. It's expensive. You are paying top dollar. But, and this is the key part, the negotiations don't stop. They happen in the background.
So we are paying full price while we argue about the discount.
Yes. And think about how that completely changes the incentives. Right now, under the current system, does the government have any financial reason to hurry up the negotiations?
No. Actually, the exact opposite. Every single day they delay is a day they save money on the drug budget. Delay is literally profitable for them.
Precisely. But under accelerated access, the government is bleeding money starting on day one. They are paying the high list price. Suddenly, the Ministry of Health is extremely motivated to speed up the negotiation, finish the HTA poacher work, and get that price down to the lower negotiated rate.
Oh, that is clever. It puts a massive fire under the bureaucrats.
It completely inverts the incentive structure. Speed now saves money.
But what about the drug companies? If they are getting full price on day one, won't they just drag their feet? Like, oh, sorry, we can't meet for negotiations until next year.
You might think so, but they have significant risks too under this model. If the negotiations fall apart completely, they risk being delisted or having their supply restricted. They want the certainty of a long-term negotiated contract. Plus, Skinner notes that under this model, any difference between the initial list price and the final negotiated price could be rebated back to the government retroactively.
Ah, okay. So there is a built-in mechanism to settle the tab later.
Exactly. But the most important thing, the whole point of this, is that while the government and the manufacturers are in a boardroom fighting over the calculator, the patient isn't the one being used as leverage.
Because the patient already has the medicine.
The patient has been taking it since day one. They aren't waiting 800 days for the price tag to be finalized.
It really challenges the whole idea that these delays are just inevitable.
Yeah.
We tend to think, oh, it takes 2 years because science is hard and economics are complicated. But it sounds like it takes 2 years because we've designed a system where nobody is in a rush.
Yeah, it's entirely a policy choice. We have chosen a system that prioritizes administrative sequence over patient access. Skinner is arguing we could simply choose differently.
And when you look at those numbers, again, 11% coverage in BC, 800-day waits in PEI, it feels like the current choice is just leaving a lot of modern science sitting on a shelf.
It really is. We are living in a golden age of pharmaceutical innovation right now. We are curing things we couldn't even treat 10 years ago. But if the delivery system is broken, the invention doesn't even matter.
It's like inventing the high-speed internet, but only letting people connect with dial-up.
That's a very apt analogy.
So to recap what we've unpacked today for you listening, we have nearly 200 new innovative drugs approved by Health Canada in the last 5 years. These are safe, effective treatments, but depending entirely on where you live, your public plan might cover as few as 20 of them.
And for the lucky ones they do cover, you are looking at a wait time of anywhere from a year and a half to well over 2 years.
All because of this relay race of bureaucratic checkpoints that happen one after another instead of concurrently?
Well, the evidence strongly suggests this wait and save strategy is actually costing lives and likely driving up hospital bills in the long run.
It's a heavy reality check. It definitely changes how I view the whole concept of universal healthcare.
It really forces us to ask, is our coverage theoretical? Or is it actual? Because a drug you can't access is exactly the same as a drug that was never invented.
That is the thought I'm going to be stuck with for a while. It's a powerful point. A massive thank you to the Canadian Health Policy Journal and Brett J. Skinner for this eye-opening brief. It's definitely given us a lot to think about regarding the actual machinery behind our prescriptions.
It certainly has. It's an important conversation.
And thank you for listening to this deep dive. Stay curious, stay healthy, and maybe check your provincial formulary.
It couldn't hurt.
See you next time.